Hey, this is Jonathan Wellens doing automated universal traffic inspector. Introspector.
All right, thank you. Yeah, so I'm Jonathan Wellens. I'm going to talk about a network simulation package that I wrote last fall. And there were sort of two goals for it. The package is written in Scheme, and on one hand, it's sort of intended to be a case study of what the key advantages are of using Scheme, how fast you can do it, if it's really an effective prototyping language or production language. And on the other hand, the package solves a problem that I had run into. So I was coming at this sort of as an outsider a little bit. I worked as a software developer in the web publishing industry for a couple of years, and nobody's heard of Scheme or Lisp, or at least ever wants to use them. I actually used Perl much more than I used Scheme. I learned Scheme first, but you know, in the areas that I've been in the networks and web publishing, things like that, there aren't a lot of the key libraries you would need to use it. But I'd always been sort of convinced that Scheme was a strong choice, and so I thought that this would help test that out. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what this DALI package is. That's the acronym. What it's supposed to do. I'm going to show how you would use it. I'm going to solve a simple example with it of a network. And then I'll talk about the results of the case study. So DALI is actually part of its own acronym. And I put these other examples up here I thought people would relate to. And so you could actually make the first letter anything you wanted. And I chose this D because this actually sounds like the name of one of my professors, and so that would sort of help me get a good grade. Okay, so first purpose, there's a lot of network simulation software out there of different kinds, and there's a very famous example called NS2. Has anybody heard of NS2? Okay. And most stuff in this area is done in C and C++ for efficiency because, you know, you may actually be using it with real networks and want to have access to sockets. And the second purpose, so this is an overview of what it does. And the key to what the kind of networks you would use this for is when I was a web publishing software developer, we had a cluster of web servers, and we got around 20 million hits a day, so sort of a medium-sized website. So we had front-end servers that would handle initial requests, and they would serve static content like images, and they would proxy dynamic requests back to a cluster of about 8 servers we had that ran the application logic. And then those could also propagate requests to database servers. And so we sort of had this multi-layered architecture with pools of servers, and you know, it's not really obvious how you allocate servers to these pools, you know, the right numbers to have, the ways you should have them connect. And every web request, you know, is pretty different for the most part. You can have requests that run application code and they run a database query, and they process that and they do more database queries. I wanted something that would simulate multi-layered networks like this and allow you to sort of tune parameters and sort of, you know, experiment with it a little bit. So this is flexible in the sense that you can send in lots of different kinds of jobs. And of course, off of the web, if a request takes too long to be processed, then there's some limit and you might as well not have done it at all because the user will be disappointed or left the site or otherwise it'll have failed. And then finally, there's a lot of work for us to do in the future, so I'll get to that. So you would use this software in any of 3 different places, and I'm just going to talk about this briefly. You would use it before you build a network, and you would use it when you're growing it, and most importantly, this is when it's come up the most, is when you have something in your network in some sort of hot spot where jobs are being dropped or taking too long to do a high load on the server, the actual problem could be upstream from that, so I would use this to help find spots like that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about load balancing algorithms in particular. When you have a cluster, say we're talking about the application layer, And jobs come into the front-end proxies. They need to have a way of being assigned to the second layer. You can do random assignments. You can do round robin. And then there are smarter things where you send to the least loaded of the servers. These are different. This is a taxonomy here. Static is where you always send to the same thing, or you have the same algorithm. Dynamic is something where you're collecting state about what the other servers are doing. Adaptive algorithms are more sophisticated than dynamic algorithms. And then there's something called transfer policy, where preemptive transfer policy would be where, say, you had an application server running a job, and you would actually transfer that to another server before it finished. And that has a high overhead. That's not something I looked at with this project. Mostly what you see is non-preemptive transfers, where you wait till the job finishes and you move to the next stage. So you sort of move horizontally between the stages instead of vertically within the same stage. So transfer policy, the roles of all the servers in a network. Selection policy, which job to transfer. These are all different things you'll look at when you're designing a large-scale network. And a location policy. And those are all sort of orthogonal in some fashion. And the final policy is the information policy. And this is something that you run into when you're setting up the model about what kinds of state you want to store in each one of the servers in the network. Demand-driven, where a server collects more information when it needs to transfer a job. You could also have it collect information when it's just pushed from either a centralized server or in just sort of a multicast fashion. And so I'll just step through an example of where I use this to tune a very simple network that only had two layers. And for this, I'm going to compare selection algorithms. So this network, let me find a picture of it, actually. So the first layer receives the job. It does its part of the job, and then it needs to pass it to the second layer. And so it can pass it random. It can pass it to the second element in the second layer that has the most space available. Or it can pass to a random one of the ones that have space available. So between the first two, you can tell the second one's obviously going to be better than the first one. And then you could give the job to the one that has the most space. And then just as a test, you could also give it to the one that has the least space available. So here it looks like number three is going to be the best, but we can see how much they vary. And these algorithms, they sort of keeping we're keeping a number of the variables the same. We're using the same transfer policy and the same selection policy, but we're changing the location policy and the information policy. Before I go into the results of that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the advantages that we actually discovered from using Scheme. And some of the things that would be harder to do in other languages that I'd used before this. And so the first one is it's very easy to write recursive data structures in the Scheme. And this is a very important thing when you have cyclic graphs, which can happen in this particular kind of network. There's no reason why a server can't pass a job to itself, or you can't have something that goes back and forth between two servers any number of times. We have functions that you create that specify how a node will pass a job to another server. And those can be recursive, they can be mutually recursive, they can call themselves, they can do anything. And that comes up in certain real-world situations. Scheme, you can create anonymous functions. You can do some Lisp as well, obviously. And this is very useful for defining, for saving, making very compact code, where we were able to basically write functions that return the graph layouts and we can just pass them in, basically, anonymous functions that will specify how a server will choose the successor server. And of course, Scheme has excellent struts. This is the node struct that we use. It has an ID, it has certain things, certain successors, it has a capacity, it has a speed. All the servers can have different values for these. And finally, the last item in here is the function that it uses. When it finishes its stage, it needs to pass to the next one. And finally, the scheme macros were extremely powerful. These were very helpful. I didn't foresee exactly how powerful these would be. It turns out that in DALI source code, there's nothing duplicated at all. Like, there's not even things that are mostly similar. And every principle has exceptions, but this isn't one of the exceptions. We really got it, so it was very well normalized code. So here's the network that I set up for this presentation. And so it has one layer with two servers, another with six, and then it has this sort of finished state over here that nothing can leave from. And this you might see numbers like this in some web service infrastructures, where you could have front ends, and maybe these six servers could be both application and database servers. And so this is the code that you could write to set that up just initially. The test network is just an array of nodes, and each of them has an ID, and then you can see that these are the IDs here. These are the successors to those nodes. And so you can see the first two go to these six, and these last six. In the picture, I had a finished node, but it doesn't really matter because the jobs know when they're finished. And then these are start nodes, which means that jobs can come into them. And these other ones are finished, so that's how you know you don't need to have successors. And then finally, the numbers over here are basically the memory of the computers and how fast they are. And so you can change all these parameters to see how they affect basically the quality of the cluster as a web server. And finally, in this case, I'd set these first two up to choose successor servers at random. And it doesn't matter what you put in for the last six here because they don't have successors. This is just a false scheme. Oh, and then finally, this last line down here is the rate that jobs come into those two initial servers. Let's see. Okay, and so I'm using, so I developed this mostly with the MIS scheme environment, and here I'm saying, run for until you have 1,000 transitions, do the whole experiment 3 times, and this is a way of specifying the successor function for how things come into the initial two servers. I think this works fairly well on the other scheme implementations, because it primarily uses things that are fairly portable. So if you ran that that command, then you, after 1,000 transitions of jobs through the servers, you would be able to get a total of 237 jobs through the network. The reason why you see this 1/3 over here is because I ran the whole experiment 3 times and then averaged the 3 numbers together. And standard deviation of how many jobs finished, and then the fraction of the jobs that came in that were dropped. And this output here, I've set the flow in at 60, which is very high compared to the capacity of the two front layer servers, which is why you have such a huge number of dropped jobs. In this case, 1/3 of them were being lost from the network. So that would probably be a bad thing. So you probably would not keep this infrastructure. And then this is much more verbose results in case you want to see exactly how every job performed, how every server performed, and then you can take this data and put it into some sort of a graphical application, and that's what I'm getting at. So between the four algorithms I described at the beginning, you can see here that this green line is the naive one that just picks at random. It obviously performs worse, but this graph doesn't really show you what's going on with these other three, so you can, in this graph I've taken the random and the longest, which are worse than shortest, and I subtracted them from shortest and then divided, basically taking their percentage they are away from shortest. And so you can do this with DALI. You can pre-process the data, then put it into a graphical application like this. And you can see that there's a 5 to 10% performance loss with longest queue, and a 5% loss with random queue. And so in this case, this we knew what the numbers, which, how they would be ranked, but now we know pretty much exactly how bad they are and how that degrades over as the network traffic increases. Of course, at very high traffic levels, every algorithm is going to perform poorly. That's why this goes back to zero. And then at low traffic levels, all the jobs get done about how bad the algorithm is. That's why they all perform the same at that end. And so I redid the experiment with, instead of doing just three trials at 1,000, so the software is pretty fast, but this is not something that you would probably, you'd check your email or something while this was running. And I count the number of drop jobs for each of the three sort of contending algorithms, and you can see how these sort of Poisson graphs sort of landed on the number of drop jobs they have. The important thing here is the longest queue algorithm it has a peak that's about 10 jobs further to higher, and the shortest is about 10 in the other direction. And so you could take this and figure out what your cost-benefit analysis was for the value or the cost of a drop job and the value of a satisfied customer, if you were really into those kind of metrics or economical bases for changing your network infrastructure. So this was a case study, and the first version of this was written in basically three evenings. Where it got to the point where it did all the simulation that you saw up here. And I was very pleased with that. I mean, it really surprised me compared to the kinds of things I was used to expecting from C and C++ and for all the other languages that I've worked with. And so in this, of course, the second part of the case study is that it seems to match our results, what we expect, pretty well. But there's a lot of work to do. In particular, the successor functions I described all looked at what the next level was doing, but it'd be nice to look further downstream than that. Since the data model is all available through the API, a user who was using this could use the global network behavior to decide to pass a job. And the successor, this has a hard limit on how long a job will last. But if you're using the web, it isn't actually a hard limit. It's better to have 1 second than 2 seconds, and a half second is better than 1 second, but there's not a cutoff. And finally, I've said several times that it seems like it was faster, it was better, the code is more compact, it seems more maintainable than if we'd used C++ or something. But I think that's a sort of a dangerous thing just to say. So what I'd like to do is actually clone this, or find somebody who's a real advocate for C++, who wants to volunteer some time and actually see which is better in sort of a more objective fashion. And so thank you very much.
Questions?
I may have missed it at the start, I apologize. Which scheme did you use?
So I used the MIS scheme environment.
Right. And you found the macros easy?
Yeah, for the things I was using for, yeah.
Anyone else? Okay, thank you.